The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt Boone!
Media Productions. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another week here at Why It Ended. I am super stoked for today's show because one of my good buddies is on, and I think he's going to open up your eyes a lot to a great career that he had and how good of a wrestler he really was and still is. Matt, today we got Mike Knox on. You ready for the show, bro?
I'm so ready, but I got a couple other things I want to talk about. First of all, we love our listeners. And of course, with our listeners, we want to get 500 YouTube subscribers. So if we get 500 YouTube subscribers, we'll give you a bonus show. And we're getting close. So go ahead. And I love our listeners because they tweet us all the time and we tweet back. But I don't sometimes because I put up a poll I thought was a slam dunk, Robbie. I asked who the funny guy was. And do you remember who won that poll on Twitter?
Well, I mean, I never even checked on it because I already know the answer is me. Clearly, I'm the funny guy, Matt.
God damn it. I don't even know how that's possible, but maybe they thought, I don't know. So, but the thing I'm really excited about, is I saw over the weekend on Saturday that Muhammad Hassan, Mark Capati, had returned to wrestling after 13 years. How do you like them apples, Robbie E.?
Didn't a few weeks ago he pretty much say he was never going to step foot in a ring again?
He said, I've already done it. I've had my fill of it. I've been through that. That's not who I am now. And now, you know, and it's funny. I did text him about it. And do you know who he kind of gave credit to?
Why It Ended.
I think he gave us a little bit of credit. And guess what, folks? After this outstanding Mike Knox interview, and I know it's going to be outstanding because we talked to him earlier today and just chatted about what we were going to talk about. This is one funny, engaging dude. You're going to love this show. But afterwards, what do we got coming up, Robbie?
We have a special little follow-up interview with Muhammad Hassan. Just to see how it was returning to the ring. First time in 13 years, returning to a small independent show after you leave your last match wrestling The Undertaker. That's definitely got a good story behind it. So we're going to catch up with him and follow up. And Matt, we are changing people's lives, man.
I know, man. Like, I never anticipated having a Why It Ended, Where Are They Now segment, you know, 2 months after we started. But you know what? That dude came off like such a good guy who got such a raw deal. I am thrilled for him, regardless of the reason.
Yeah, I can't. I'm just honestly curious to hear how that first bump felt. Because when you don't hit the mat for 13 years, that's got to hurt.
I'm sure, and I'm glad I'll never know that sensation. But I will know is that we have a great interview coming up with Mike Knox. He's going to talk about some subjects we're all curious about. Now, of course, we're going to get our 500 subscribers for YouTube. You got our bonus show. But please interact with us as well. How can you do that, Robbie?
Well, our numbers are growing each week, so we do thank you guys. But remember, Twitter, follow us, at Why It Ended. Instagram, follow us, at Why It Ended. And remember, when you subscribe to our show, when you're done listening to it on iTunes or whyitended.com or wherever you're getting the podcast from, make sure you leave a rating, leave a review, and just tell your friends. Take your phone's friends. Take your mom's phone out of her hand and just click subscribe on her phone. Just subscribe on every phone that you possibly can. Thank you.
We'd love to have you do that. And make sure to follow us on Instagram as well. Help us get those subscribers. Coming up right after this, Mike Knox on Why It Ended. Hey, everybody. Matt Coon here. Now, Robbie and I are super excited that the show is blowing up, and you know it's blowing up because you're listening to it. And if you'd like to advertise to the listeners of this show and reach tens of thousands of wrestling fans each week to sell your product or your service, go ahead and give us a holler. Email us at whyitendedmail@gmail.com, and you could get an add-on more reasonable than you think for a lot more people than you think. So give us a holler at whyitendedmail@gmail.com and let's get you on the air today. One. And now we have with us the great Mike Knox. Mike, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right, bro. I'm trying not to laugh so much. The great Mike Knox? Who you been talking to, man?
Hey, come on, bro. You are the great Mike Knox.
Bro.
Hey, well, real quick, Mike, Matt, I need to just tell you, when I was setting up Skype a few hours ago with Mike, and we were just making sure everything was going to work perfectly, he actually called me on video chat, and I told him we didn't need to do video, we only had to do audio, and then he was happy because he said he could be naked while we do this interview, so I'm pretty sure he's naked right now.
That's a great visual, Mike.
Go ahead and use your imagination, guys. Drink it all in. let it haunt your dreams.
Hey, bro. So to get right into it, you know, at the end of the interview, we like to know why it ended. But at the beginning, we want to know why it began. So how did you originally fall in love with pro wrestling?
Bro, it was a dark and stormy night in 1984.
This is what I like.
I fell upon as a child a Saturday night's main event, Hulk Hogan versus Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff.
The cage match.
And they filmed it like out in, I think like Daytona or something like that. And there's all these cool things like Slaughter and like Bobby Heenan did the slide, like the army like rappel slide, all this kind of like really fun stuff, man. I fell in love with wrestling right then. I knew I wanted to be a wrestler after that day.
How old were you?
I was in the second grade, bro.
We legit 5 minutes ago, me and Robbie were talking, and I told him that who was my favorite wrestler as a kid, Robbie? I just told you.
Paul Orndorff, you just said it.
Yeah, so were you more of a heel guy, or were you a Hulkamaniac, Mike?
I was a Hulkamaniac, dude. My whole room. My bedroom was covered from wall to wall in Hulk Hogan posters, dude.
And what is your bedroom covered wall to wall in now?
Wall to wall Robbie E. headshots.
Just the head?
Yeah, just the headshots.
So,
I don't want people too crazy.
You must have had a background in sports. You're like a, you know, really
yeah,
big
I played
guy.
Football and baseball and basketball. I golfed, which I love telling people. But yeah, man, I did everything. We were in a small little town, so it was either sports or work. You know what I mean? So.
And when you were playing sports in high school, did you like already start researching wrestling schools and stuff, saying like that you wanted to start at some point, or did you not know anything about it yet?
I was just the biggest mark you'd ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, I had no idea like what to do. Like, me and all my friends would get together for like Raw parties and like all that kind of stuff. And I started doing some research and I found a school. It was 8 hours away from me by car.
Wow.
And I would drive that 2 times a week.
No, wait. You're talking about UPW?
No, I was doing UPW, but that was later on. I was driving up to Oxnard just to train
okay.
with this guy. Wow. And his big claim to fame was he was one of the doinks. Gary Crusher Key. Man.
Yeah.
How long did that last, those drives?
Bro, I did that for about 6 months. And then they sold the school to a guy down in Arizona, the Navajo Warrior, Steve Islas. And he became my second trainer. And I stayed with him for like, shoot, man, until I got signed with WWE. It was a tale as old as time. The Navajo Warrior versus the Outlaw Mike Knox. Cowboys versus Indians on the res, you know what I mean? I didn't win a match my whole like first 9 years of my career because we were on the res, man. Just take shots.
You were doing matches where the cowboy was the heel?
Hell yeah, man. Crazy? You ever been on a reservation before?
No.
Oh, man. That was a blast. They'd set those shows up. Like, I was just a kid. I didn't know what the hell was going on. They'd be paying us, like, $40 a night. And we'd do 10 or 12 days in a row just hitting all the different reservations in, like, northern Arizona and southern Utah and all that. Man, what a mark I was. Shit, there was only, like, 7 of us in the whole group. So we would end up having to do, like, the first guys would do a singles match, and then they'd take their hoods off and get on a completely different character. Yeah. And then they'd wrestle on down the road, and then we'd turn it into a tag match, and then I'd have a single, and we'd turn that into, oh, my God, man. It was like, and then we'd have, like, midgets and girls. I mean, little people and girls.
if you would have said, it would have been funnier if you said, oh, I mean little people and midgets.
Yeah, man, I look back on that, man. I learned so much. I just had to, like, to just start to learn how to work, man. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was just a big goof.
The good times when nothing mattered, you know? Those are like the camps in England, kind of.
Oh, man. Back when they, like, when it was so innocent. Like, I saw a picture of myself the other day when I was young like that. And I was just like, brother.
You're yeah, a lot's happened since then.
Right. You're in for some shit, dude.
You are in for some shit.
Hey, so at some point though, especially you being a big guy who can move, you get hooked up with UPW, Ultimate Pro Wrestling in California. And how did you get hooked up, and what can you tell us about the owner, the much talked about owner, Rick Bassman?
Rick Bassman. Man, I never really, I only had one small problem with like Rick Bassman, and I'll get to that in a second. UPW was cooler than anything I'd ever like been a part of at that time. It was Navajo Warrior. He was the one that got me involved in it. And we started going up, and it was cool. I started going up and training with him. And that was where I met, like, Cena and Frankie Kazarian and, like, Tom Howard and, like, all these, like, really, really, like, different and great wrestlers at the same time. Like, Samoa Joe was there. Joey Ryan was there. Like, KG Sakota and, like, Nathan Jones. Like, so such, like, a weird mix of, like, eclectic, big, huge right. wrestlers. He loved Rick Bassman. Loved big, jack dudes. Because, I mean, I guess his big claim to fame was, like, Ultimate Warrior and Sting.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But I know, like, the only problem I ever had with him is, like, I think I was in Japan doing something that he had helped me go and get. And I found out that the office was giving him a little cut, and then he wanted to take another cut for me when I went back, and I didn't think that was right, you know what I mean, since he already got one cut. Right. So I just told him, I was like, hey, man, if you want your money, you're gonna have to come get it from me, dude.
So at the time in UPW, you had all these guys who would go on to be world-class workers and some guys who maybe had a lot of star quality who didn't really reach that point. At the time, if you could have pointed at one guy who was there at UPW and said, this guy is going to make it, who would it have been?
John Cena, bro. Absolutely. The prototype. Yeah, the prototype.
What was it about him?
Dude, he could... It was crazy. I mean, of course, he had the physique like one of those old He-Man dolls. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he could talk, too. When you put the microphone in his hand, like he didn't... A lot of people, like, they excel at on the mic. Like, Robbie, you're awesome on it. I'm not that good on it. You know what I mean? Like, some people are great and some people excel in other spots, man. And he got on the microphone and he never missed a beat, man. He was funny. He was witty and quick, and he still is. His wrestling isn't all, you know, it isn't like, you know, Benoit or like any of like the real like technical guys, but you don't really have to be in today's wrestling, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you never really had to be.
Yeah. Too bad. Hey, well, good thing for us. Jesus.
But when you said, like, you looked at him and you thought he was going to be something, did you think he was going to be something, or did you think he was going to be as big as he is? Because, I mean, he is the guy. Like, did you ever, is it weird knowing him, like, knowing how big that he got, you know, movies and stuff?
I couldn't have wished it on a nicer guy, man. Like, we had a couple, like, really cool, we brought him on a couple of those Rez tours, and he would drive down from L.A. all the way down to my front porch. You know, he'd park his old Jeep in my driveway, leak all over the place. My dad was pissing and moaning about it. And then we get in the car and drive for like 3 weeks. You know what I mean? So you get to know somebody when you're doing that. You're sharing a room with them. You know how it is. You share rooms every night and you're just two young 21, 22 year old guys, and the freaking world is your oyster. You think you're going to, you know, you think you're going to be something. Like, I thought he was definitely going to make it and get a shot.
You eventually, of course, get the attention of WWE, which eventually UPW turns into developmental territory for WWE. Who did you first talk to with the WWE? What did they want to do with you? And when did you get signed?
Well, let's see here, man. I got signed in 05, but it was at UPW. They'd always have like guests that would come down, like Chavo would come down, like Bruce Prichard would come down, or, you know, like big guys, especially when Rick was trying to get it to be like a little developmental, which it was for a little bit, but it didn't last too long, man. It crashed and burned in fabulous fashion. And, you know, and I started sneaking backstage for the WWE shows. Like, I didn't know I was, you know, not allowed to do that. Like, scared shitless, you know, and of course.
So what, by sneaking in, they thought you were, like, just an extra or something?
Yeah, I was sneaking in, like, trying to get in the ring and, like, work out and stuff. So, like, John, I did a couple, like, dark matches. I did a bunch of stuff, like, on Velocity and, like, Shotgun Saturday Night and all that kind of stuff. I got to dress up as all kinds of cool, like, characters. I just actually fell upon something today. Like, I was a judge for when Scott Steiner and Triple H did the pose down.
Nice.
Like when they were having their big feud. And when I was, like, a paramedic when Big Show got shot with a tranquilizer gun and his head shaved. Like, I've forgotten all this stuff that I did. Like, I was a cop a couple times. Like, and finally, Johnny Hicks is like, hey, man, we're opening a thing in Atlanta. He's like, you're on the list. Don't worry. So, like, me, I'm like, holy shit, I'm on the list, man. Oh, I can't wait, man. I can't wait to get rid of everybody I know that sucks over here in Phoenix and tell them all to suck it. I rule. Like, you know what I mean? So, I'm sitting there, like, you know, cock of the walk. And then, like, 2 fucking years go down the line and nothing happens. Like, what the hell is going on? Like, and every time, like, don't worry, you're on the list. You're on the list. For 2 years, I was on the list.
You ended up going to Deep South Wrestling, and I believe your head trainer was Bill DeMott. Is that true?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And I guess that begs the question of what everybody talks about, what his reputation was. What are your experiences working with Bill DeMott?
Man, that's so hard. All right. Remember when I told you I was on the list, and I was sneaking backstage at all these places? I snuck backstage at Raw one time. And everybody was in the ring, and Bill used to get in the ring. And he'd, you know, put on, like, little seminars and stuff like that. And I got in the ring, and he was trying to take me down with, a hammerlock or something like that. And I was still real green, so I didn't know, so I was fighting him. So he stopped the whole class and, like, made a big scene. And then he, like, gave me a little yank and, like, yanked my shoulder, like, right out of socket. And I was like, oh, shit, man, like, whatever. So I was like, okay, I learned my lesson, whatever. Like, 6 months later when they came back, or a year later, whenever it was, I came back, and Bill was in the ring again. And I got in the ring again, and he put me in that same hammerlock, and I went right down to the floor. And then he's like, you can't just fold like a big, you know, like a big pussy, like blah, blah, blah. And he goes, whap, and he ripped my damn shoulder out again. So I'm sitting there, I was like, what the hell is going on with this?
Now, when you say rip your shoulder out, do you mean give you a tug, or do you mean, actually hurt you?
I think he thought he was giving me a tug, but I was not able to work out. I was incapacitated for months at a time.
Oh my god.
So then they said, then I get signed, and they're like, yep, and your head trainer's Bill. I was like,
fuck
me running. So I'm down in Puerto Rico now, and everybody's called Bill, and like all this stuff's going on. And apparently when I get back and I drive up there, I was the only guy I never to check in. Like, I never called Bill and be like, hey man, this and that, which, you know, I just didn't do it because I was scared, man. I was like, shit, this guy's going to run me right the hell out of here. And he was a very hard trainer, man. He was hard, but guess what, man? The wrestling business is hard.
Yeah.
It has to be, man. Like, and that was a little bit different time than it is now. So when we come in there in Deep South, like, we had such a chip on our shoulders because OVW was the big place. And, like, they put us in McDonough, Georgia, and it was like this little, like, you know, I hate to say bumpkin town, but like, to explain it to the viewers, you know, to the listeners, that's kind of what it was. You know what I mean? Like, it was a very small town. The school was thrown together. We didn't even have a building. We had no AC. Like, we had one ring, and like, it was 15 of like these guys that thought this was it. And like, you know, Bill's trying to make us quit, and Jody Hamilton's like, ah, these guys are all green as shit. How are we ever supposed to put a show on with these guys? Like, and it was all guys that had been in the business for like 8-10 years, like MVP and Miz and, you know, me and Nykirk and like Jack Bull, like guys that had been around, like the Shane twins had been around for 20 years, you know, like all these guys that have worked. Like, and so now it's, Bill's like, well, I guess I'm going to have to break him down. And I'll tell you what, man, I've said it a million times. He was very rough on us. He was mean. Like, we were nervous and scared and on edge all the time. But I swear to you, I've never met a guy that would do more for you. You know, and I try not to get into stuff like this, man. But I was going through some stuff, and I was partying real hard, and I was sabotaging myself. and I had a little bit of a problem. And he saw that, and he took me in, and he had me live with him for weeks to make sure that I was doing the right things and I was staying straight and trying to keep myself, you know, on the path that I needed. So was it tough? Hell yeah. But the wrestling business is tough, man. He was trying to prepare us for crazy European trips where, like, you're getting hazed and, like, all this time on the road where you don't know what's going on when the agents tell you one thing and you think you do and you come back and get yelled at. Like, it was a whole mental thing, too, that a lot of the guys didn't understand. You know, they weren't used to that kind of stuff. So he got a bad rep, I think. And was it deserved? You know, in today's day and age, yeah. But, like, back when he was broke in and back when I thought, you know, like, you're supposed to be a man, you know, it's supposed to be hard. Like, if it was easy, every nerd would do it. You know what I mean?
So all in all, do you think deep inside he really did want everyone to succeed?
I know he did. I know he did. But he was that tough New York, you know what I mean? And he came up with, like, Johnny Rods and stuff. I know he wanted everybody to succeed. But he was, you know, he was quick to judge. And once he made that judgment, like, you had to work pretty hard to prove him wrong. But it could happen. You know, it happened to a few people, and a few people got lost in the shuffle that, man, it really screwed the wrestling business over, you know, that these guys didn't get a good look early. You know, like Kenny Omega, I remember him coming in. And, he, you know, he was still, like, a little bit raw, but he was exactly the same kind of worker he is now, you know what I mean? And it just didn't take, you know, it wasn't the WWE style. So he never got a look, and then he kind of got bashed on a little bit, and then next thing you know, he was out of there. Like, it was, you know, it was crazy. That happened to a bunch of people.
He left on his own, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it directly because he couldn't deal with Bill DeMott?
I'm not, you know what? I wasn't in his head. I don't know. I just remember talking to him when he left and, you know.
Yeah.
Telling him, like, dude, don't let this. Whatever. And you. I don't know. Shit, I was drunk, probably. You're the future of this business, kid. I swear.
I see Japanese people in your future.
Yeah, man, he's doing freaking great. Man, I'm happy for him. People had heat with Bill because he was, like, you know, he was kind of a bully. You know, kind of a bully. But wrestling, bro.
But even though you say, of course, the wrestling business is very tough, we all know that, or we should know that, and he prepared you for that, you're saying that a lot of different wrestlers who you think probably would have made it with a different style didn't make it through the wall that was Bill DeMott when he was training.
Yeah. Yeah. He was tough, man. But that's what they brought. That's what they put him in our school for. He was supposed to toughen us up. He wanted to make sure that people that came out of there were fucking hard asses, man. And he did.
What would you say, through? Because I've heard, again, I've just heard so many different stories from different people. What was, like, I've heard, like, 1,000 squats and this and that. Like, what was the hardest thing you'd probably say he put you through?
Tony Santarelli had a birthday. He was 27 years old. And we used to have this thing. It was called Make a Deal Friday. It was the day after we do our shows on Thursday. So everybody's beat up. And, like, the classes that we do are just brutal, brutal on your body, man. Like, so his deal was, like, we'd make a deal, like, we'd push the truck or we'd run through town or we'd do, like, embarrassing stuff or, like, flip the tires or, you know, something, anything to get out of having a hard-ass class, like, with hard cardio and bumping and, like, all that crap. So it was Tony's birthday. He's 27. Bill makes us a deal. Like, we're like, hey, Bill, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I was like, hey, man, I'll go get everybody beers and, like, we'll have a great time. And he's like, no, you know, we're going to work. You know, the show sucked last night. Like, you guys weren't working hard enough. And we're like, man, it's Tony's birthday. Come on, give us a break. He's like, okay, he's 27. We can give him 27 chops or we can do 2,700 squats without moving your feet or stopping. God. Oh, my God. It's up to Tony. So Tony, like, so we're like, yeah. And then, like, Tony's like, well, who's going to chop me? And then Bill's like, I am. And he's like, fuck that. He's like, I ain't taking 27 chops from Bill. You know, and he's like, fuck that. Let's all suffer. So we're like, ah, you. Puss.
Oh, God. So you guys must have hated that guy.
Here we go, man. Like, who all was there? I can't remember who all was there. Like, Angel Williams was there. Like, MVP was there. I want to say, like, you remember Vladimir Kozlov, the big, like, yep. Russian bear? He was there. There was so funny. Miz, there was all kinds of people there. So we started doing these flipping squats at 9 in the morning or whatever the hell it was. So we get 1,000 down. which 500 was our everyday thing. We do 500 every day, no matter what. So we'd sit there. We got to 1,000. You know, everybody's like sitting there, and like Bill's like, "Okay, guys, like Tony can take 17 chops, or you guys can finish up." And he's like, "Screw that." So we started doing more squats. We did 1,000 more squats. 2,000 squats comes. He's like, "All right, Tony, just take 7 chops." And he's like, "Nope." So we kept squatting. We got down to like 500 left or something. He's like, "All right, man, I'll take the 5 chops." So then by that time, we're like, "Fuck you, Tony. Like, we're finishing this shit. Like, now, of course, now that we've squatted for 4 straight hours without moving our feet." Oh my God. So, yeah, man, we finished that shit up and then went and drank a case of beer and laid by the pool for about 3 days. That was pretty rough, man.
Matt, how many squats do you think you could do?
It was so hard, man.
I could do a solid 2.7.
Yeah, I was gonna.
Dude, nowadays, as I'm in physical therapy trying to get my knees to bend to 90 degrees, I wonder why the hell, you know? maybe that had something to do with it.
So at this time when you're submerged, you know, immersed in the world of wrestling, and you're definitely seeing guys you've seen on TV and guys that you know have moved on, what were your dreams, what were your aspirations as far as your wrestling career at that point?
Man, I think if you didn't want to be a champion, if you didn't want to be the best in the world, like, you know, like that was what my dream was. I think that's why we all got into it. See yourself at Mania with like your, you know, holding the belt over your, you know, balling like a little bitch, you know what I mean? Like, you know, making moments, all that kind of stuff. Like, I used to say the same thing. Like, as soon as I started wrestling, I was like, "I'm dying at WrestleMania 33, man. I'm coming off the top of the cage in the main event, through the table, and that's it for me." What a better way to go out, I couldn't think. And then, like, yeah. And then I took, like, my first bump off the top rope. And I was like, fuck that.
Yeah, man.
Shit, that's high.
So, at some point, they decide, and you've got these dreams, and at some point, you get the dream realized, and someone tells you that you're going to WWE, and you're going up, but you end up going to ECW. So, first of all, who told you you were going up, and how did you find out it was going to be ECW, and how did you feel about it?
I was told by Bill DeMont that I was going, they were going to take a few of us up and let us do some stuff. Now, like, right before then, I had done some, like, weird stuff on the road. Like, I remember, like, the Boogeyman had gotten hurt. So they wanted me to be the Boogeyman. This is before Boogeyman, like, debuted or whatever. So I went and wrestled Bob Holly for a couple weeks on the house shows, like, as the Boogeyman. But, like,
you know, Wait a minute. Hold on, bro. I got to cut you off here a second.
Thank you.
Wait, like, you were the Boogeyman, like, had makeup on and shit, Boogeyman?
No, bro. They said, "Hey, man, we're looking for this character, the Boogeyman." When I was in Deep South, like, I had, like, a weird character, kind of, like, I had, like, long bleached blonde hair that was, like, real straggly and different colors and stuff and, like, this weird, crazy, like, stupid beard and, like, you know, I had, like, a sick character, kind of. So they were kind of thinking about maybe since he wasn't coming along as quickly as they'd hoped, that maybe I would go in as the Boogeyman, which thank God I didn't, because he killed it and I would have ruined it. 100%, dude, I'd have ruined it.
How did you feel about ECW?
All right, they said I was going up to ECW, and I was like, yes. I was like, I'm going to be able to show these motherfuckers, you know what I mean, that I'm crazy, I could do this. Like, I used to watch ECW all the time, man. I was such a huge fan of, like, RVD and freaking Balls Mahoney, all these Sandman, all this New Jack and stuff, like Lance Storm and Raven and Shane Douglas and Bam Bam and Taz, all these dudes. Like, I was like, hell yeah, man. That's what I thought it was going to be. I thought they were going to bring it back and let it just be raw and, like, you know what I mean, in small arenas with people just all on top of you and just, like, hardcore, like, cool shit. And I couldn't have been further.
You were a little off.
I couldn't have been more wrong.
A little different.
Yeah, damn it. And then, you know, I got there and Vince, like, I had my long hair and they said, "Hey, you're going to be with Kelly." And I was like, oh, shit. Okay. Because, I mean, I kind of know how that, like,
right.
You know, young girl, very pretty, you know what I mean? Like, trying to get into the business. Like, and then, like, some guy. Like, the focus is all on the girl. That's kind of death. You know what I mean? Like, having a girl with you. Which, she was 18 years old or 19 or something like that. And she was just, like, this fresh-faced, like, innocent blood in the water, like in the lot, like, oh my God. You know, and like, she didn't know, you know what I mean? So it was like, I was constantly like, the music's playing and she ain't there. And I'm like running back to pull her out of the locker room. And like, but she didn't know no better. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm sitting there in my first big thing. I'm like, I'm with the Sandman. I was like, oh shit, yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, he's saying all this stuff. And like, we started doing these house show matches. And it's like, you know, I'm working as hard as I can. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, they were kind of rotten, you know, kind of rotten matches, just getting smashed in the face with Singapore canes every single night, like one-handed, like drunks, like taking out the beer bottle and shit, like, you know, and then I'm like, okay. And then like, I never beat him once. Like, I never got like the comeuppance at the end. Then my next thing was against Balls Mahoney. Not another technical, like, great, you know, and I love, God rest him. Oh, man. Well, nicer man you'll never meet. He'll give you the shirt off his back, you know? But once again, the matches were not technical beauties. Like, you know, you're going to put those down in your highlight records. And then it just kind of kept going. And I always have like a subpar, you know, feud with somebody, and then I'd have another one, and then I'd have another one. And then they put me with Punk for a minute. And we had a couple really, really good matches, but then that's when like they're like, okay, this ECW thing's not working out. We're going to start moving guys around a little bit.
Well, I remember watching at the time and seeing you every week. You were out there every week with some kind of segment, some kind of match. But I'm not sure I was ever told as a viewer who you were, what your character was, other than Kelly Kelly's jealous boyfriend. Were you given any kind of other direction about who Mike Knox was other than that?
You know what? Exactly what you said there, almost verbatim, is what they told me, and that was all they told me. When I went there for my first, when I made my debut or whatever, I had the long hair and the beard, and like Vince McMahon comes in, like right before the show starts. He's like, "All right, Mike, blah blah." And I was like, "Oh shit, he knows my name, you know." And he's like, "Well, I don't see Kelly's boyfriend looking like this, you know." He's like, "You gotta like cut his beard off, cut his hair off," and he's like, all this shit. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, uh-oh. Like, I kind of thought my character in Deep South was going to translate over and be my character at ECW a little bit. You know what I mean? Like a crazy fucking boyfriend guy. Not like, right. Quit it, you know? Put your clothes back on, please. So, you know, what are you gonna do, man? What are you gonna do?
So you of course you talked earlier, Kelly was very young, and she's in a lot of people I know top five all time as far as beautiful women in wrestling. They were really high on her, right? It was more of a vehicle for her, you think?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. She very good close friends with Johnny Ace and guys like that, but that had nothing to do with it, man. She's beautiful and she's such a sweetheart and she was so innocent. Like, there was something that drew, you know, that drew the eyes to her. You know what I mean? She's awesome, man. I'm glad everything that she's accomplished. I'm happy for her. What a big softy I am, dude. I'm over balling.
Yeah, look at you.
Well, you had a run, of course, when ECW started. You were basically called to switching around in brands. You came back to ECW, and then things started kind of maybe going in one direction for you, where you were losing more. Things, maybe your push was being de-pushed a little bit. What was it like those last few months in ECW for you?
Well, I'd gotten myself into some trouble. Like, I think I got like a DUI or something like that right before one of the pay-per-views. And I tried to hide it, which I shouldn't have done. I should have been honest about everything, which I wasn't. But I tried to hide it, and they found out, and I felt like I was getting punished, honestly, for being a bad soldier and not, you know, being upfront with it. And I never got the word of it, but that's how I thought. That's what I felt was happening. And I thought I was going to be released after they took me off of TV for a few months. And I figured I'd be released. And then I got a call saying I was going up to coming back to ECW and working again. I was jazzed.
Well, people were thinking good about you. Like, people thought highly of you enough to have a couple vignettes before your appearance on your new brand of Raw. And you also went back to your old look a little bit, you know, where you had the hair grown out a little bit and the beard. And you actually had a feud with Rey Mysterio, so they wanted the Big Little Thing. Was this something maybe just to get Rey over, or do you feel maybe that big things were in store for you?
Man, I thought big things were in store for me when they said I was going with Rey, because he's so over. and so talented and good. Like, he was such a good babyface, you know. And I was kind of still like, I've been around a little bit in ECW, but like, his fan base didn't always translate over, you know. So it's like, I was still kind of new, and like, people really didn't know what to think about me. And like, I didn't really have that much of a character, and it was, you know, like, there was a lot of like little signs that I should have been able to pick up on. Now that I'm older, I could have done it. But at the time, I just let all these warning signs of what was happening to my career, I just let them flash and then go right by. You know what I mean? Flash, go right by. Like, so, I mean, me and Ray, I thought we had great matches. He always let me get over on him. Like, he always let me beat the dog shit out of him, man. He's a tough son of a gun. And I thought we had great matches. I forgot. I went back and watched one, like, when I was feeling nostalgic one day. And I went back and watched it. I was like, holy shit. I was like, damn, we kept a good pace up for, you know, 13, 14 minutes. Like, I was like a little proud of myself, because I was, every time I think about like WWE, I think about at the end, you know what I mean? When I was like all bloated and miserable and shit. Like, so like, when I was out there with Ray, like, we had a freaking great program. You know, I never beat him one time. And I always thought, like, what we were doing, we were building up to Mania. Is what I thought. That's what I was led to believe. We were building up for Mania. And then something happened, and they completely switched the thing around out of the blue with no build-up or nothing. They put Bradshaw in the match against him.
Right.
At Mania. And they did something like that. So they yanked me right off the whole show. And then, you know, me and him had a couple other, like, small matches, but it was fizzled out right after that. And I think I moved on to, I think it was Kane. After that, which we had some pretty fun matches too, me and Kane. We used to do the stuff on the house shows where, you know, big guys are. We never chain wrestle or work or, like, you know, do stuff that you do when you're young. So, like, when we get out there, like, we would start chaining, and, like, I'd take him in a headlock turnover and, like, get up and, like, try to bridge up and, like, do all this crap. And everybody in the locker room would be freaking out. And, like, everybody in the crowd's like, what the hell are these two idiots, like, big freaking bloated whales rolling around on each other? What are they doing? Like, but we go to the back and all the boys would be popping for it. So, like, that's all we cared about.
And what about what after Kane? What other stuff did you have going on? Was it anything after that?
You know what, they tried to do some stuff with me and Charlie Haas. Like, they were gonna tag us up. We wanted to be like the, you know, like, kind of rednecky, like, hillbilly type characters, like ugly white boys, like. And we were running against, like, Crime Time and stuff. We did a couple, like, cool stuff overseas against, like, some people. And I ended up getting hurt over there somehow. I'd rather not get into how, but, I mean, I got hurt over there. And we did a few things in the team. Like, it just, I don't know what happened. Like, if they just lost interest in it or what. But, like, we teamed up for about a month or so, and then they just kind of pulled the plug on us.
Now, when you were hurt, like, you were out hurt, like, off the road?
No, every time I ever got hurt, brother, I was always under the impression, like, you know what I mean, the out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. So
It's old school tribal training.
You tape it up, and you know what I mean, you do what you got to do, and you get your ass out there, because you worked 10 years before you ever got a look, and if you go off TV again, that's, you know, shit, that might be it. You know, this beautiful roller coaster ride may be coming to an end if I'm off TV hurt. So, you know, I'd suck it up and, you know, do my best. And you know, we did a few things. And when I got healed up, you know, like, they'd end up letting go of, I think they let go of Charlie. And everybody kind of started dropping, like, a lot of my guys kind of started dropping that I came in with. And shit, man, I knew it was only a matter of time, man. And like, then it kind of started where I was like, I kind of gave up, and I did some stuff with, and all the guys that I worked with at this time, I loved them. I didn't feel badly about, like, what was going on. Like, my career was, like, just in the shitter. And I'd checked out, my man. I'd given up after that. Like, I was like, well, I haven't won a match in like 3 years. I'm glorified jobber, basically. I'm like partying every night. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, man, I just kind of want to go home for a while, you know? I just kind of want to go home for a little while. And so whenever I did end up getting my release, like, I wasn't hurt about it at all. I wasn't butthurt at all. I was very happy.
Now, before you got your release, or before you made another brand switch, you had actually worked your way into the main event of No Way Out. You were one of the people in the Elimination Chamber. But previously in the fucking ECW pay-per-view, you couldn't even make the main event. And now you're in the main event of the Raw Elimination Chamber. You must have felt pretty good about that, so right?
Weird. It was so weird how that happened. I don't know if somebody got hurt and like fell out of the match last second or what, man. But like the night before, they're like, hey, Knox, we were in like Canada or something. They're like, you're going to win this battle royal to enter into the Elimination Chamber, like the night before. Like, I'm all out of shape and like winded. Like, I was working against like guys that were like easy to work, like R-Truth or something. Like, so we could like, get out there and like work a good, easy match and like, you know, like, or like, Jimmy Wang Yang, or like, you know, easy guys to work. All of a sudden, I'm in this freaking monstrosity of a cage. Like, I don't understand. It was like, yeah, you're going to win this 8-person battle royal to get into the main event of the next pay per view. I was like, ah, shit, man. Somebody must have lost a bet or something.
You didn't think to ask why?
Hell no, man. I was hoping to get a good payday. I was like, shit, all right, here's another chance I got. I'm going to get a good pay per view. I'm going to kick some fucking ass in there. And then, you know, we had some great ideas. And, I was very pleased with what I actually did in the match. I just wish it would have been longer. You know, I really wanted to get a spot where I could showcase myself while I was still, you know, in fairly good shape and could still work. You know what I mean? Like, when you're wrestling, you know the ride ain't going to last forever. You know, it's just kind of how it is. We all know that. We never like to talk about it, but that's how it is. It ain't going to last forever. Shit, that was my last chance.
Well, it wasn't, because after that, they switched you over to SmackDown, right?
Yep, but this whole time, every single phone call I got that was from the office, I thought it was me getting fired.
Yeah, yeah.
So they call you 6 times a month or something like that, or they call you for your travel or whatever, and every time your heart just like, boom, like falls right into your guts, and it's like, we were doing house shows and everything was good on the house shows. And I'd wake up for TVs and just like my stomach would be hurt and turn inside out. I'd be like, God dang, what are they going to do to me today? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what embarrassing shit am I going to have to do today? So like I said, by the time like they'd move me back to SmackDown. And by that time, like I pretty much every day, like I was just kind of like walking the plank every day. I knew it was very, very close to being done.
But in a lot of ways, you were self-sabotaging, right? Like you.
Oh, 100%, man. 100%. So you... I was out every night. That's all I cared about.
You weren't just afraid it was going to happen. You were making it happen.
Oh, absolutely. I foreshadowed the thing, man. I sit back and laugh sometimes. I say, man, I should start doing seminars and showing people what, like, how exactly not to, you know what I mean, to run your career. Like, it's crazy, man. Yeah, I was out every night and I didn't care much, man. I wasn't going to the gym and I wasn't training and I wasn't doing the stuff that you have to do to wrestle at an elite level with the best in the world. Like, I stopped doing it for over a year.
You know, so you weren't still doing 500 squats a day?
No, absolutely not. The second they pulled me up and said I didn't have to do something, I'd never work my legs out again.
So when you finally, yeah, you're going to go to the gym tomorrow and do them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm just going to get them kicked back up, man.
So when you finally did get the call, who was the one actually doing the calling?
Johnny Ace, brother. Johnny Ace. You know,
what was that like?
It was like, oh, you know, the you know, we really like you. And we like your work rate, this and that. And he's like, but, you know, like, we don't really have any storylines for you. Creative's got nothing for you. We don't know. He's like, maybe go to Japan and, you know, try to reinvent yourself. And I was like, I remember telling him, because, like, I knew it was coming. Like, I was driving to, like, a random, like, birthday party with a bunch of the boys. So I pull over and Haley's in there. We were still pretty new at this time. So, like, she didn't know, like, that's kind of how it was and how I was feeling. So I pull over. I'm talking to him. And I was like, well, shit, man. I've been being jobbed out for the last couple of years. I was like, I'd have to be gone from the company for 3 years. I mean, and come back for anybody to like take me seriously as any kind of a threat, like to a belt or anything like that you wish to achieve, like in your career. So he's like, okay, yeah, cool. I'll put you in touch with this guy, like, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, all right, man, thanks for the opportunity, Johnny. Like, and he was always nice to me. You know, he's got a bad rap, too, you know, but he's a businessman. That's a hard-ass job, man. I wouldn't want to do it. And, you know, so we let him go, and everything was cool. And I went to the party that night and tried not to tell nobody what was going on. And then word came out on the wire. So, like, all the boys, like, oh, I'm so sorry, bro. Like, you know how they are. You know, it sucks. And everybody does feel sorry. But, like, I didn't give a shit. Like, I was ready to be out of there anyways. My only saving grace was I made the video game that same year when I got fired. So the most money that I ever made, like, in my whole career, which, you know, is laughable, really, but was the year I got let go because of the video game check.
So I'm not going to ask details, but, like, for a big, fat video game check, are we talking 5 zeros or 6 zeros?
Well, I wouldn't say six. Six for some people, I'm sure. But for a lonely old guy just barely hanging on, you know what I mean? Five's fine.
So you're getting 5 zeros for a video game.
Yeah. Awesome, man. It's not like that anymore, man.
I'm just still baffled that you turned down $6,500 a week.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. I try to explain to people, like, I mean, how miserable I was there at the end. Like, it was bad, man. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been bad probably for me personally if I would have taken the job, but, you know.
Was the combination of, you know, alcohol and drug, or was it more depression, or what exactly was everything going on for you then?
No, man, it was a little bit of everything, you know. It's a slippery slope when you're out there, like, because you're on the road all the time, and it's a lonely life, bro. You know, it's like me, I'm kind of I'm like a sensitive guy, you know what I mean? Like, I love everybody. Robbie knows, you know what I mean? Like, I flat out genuinely, like, pretty much love every person I've ever met. You know, Robbie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So yeah, it's like, yeah. I'm sitting there and, like, you're on the road all this time, and, like, you're just, like, losing every single night, and you just kind of start, like, after the shows, you're trying to find something to eat, so you're eating crappy, and, like, you're staying out late, and...
Those 30 packs with Nunzio and Red Roof Inn gets old, right?
yeah, well, 30 packs, I don't know about that. maybe a piece, man, that little son of a gun can jam, he could drink. So, but, you know, it was like that, you know, it was that, and, like, my whole life, like, I worked real hard to get a look finally and get up there, and I thought all this shit, like, I'm going to buy my mom a car and, you know, take care of my family and, like, all this crap, and, you know, nothing that I thought was going to happen came to fruition, and I was just kind of, like, I started getting down, and then, like, I had all these stupid little nagging injuries that I never would let anybody look at, and I never got fixed, and, you know, then my body starts breaking down, so you cover it up with, you know, whatever the hell you can, you know, tape or, you know, injections in your knee or your back or whatever. Like, you do whatever you can do. And it's like, there was one point, like, I knew I had to get out of WWE when I was taking a move. I don't want to say any names. I was taking a finishing move from somebody who had hurt somebody before with that move. And I remembered how he hurt him. So when he was giving me the move, I tried to wrap my legs, like, around the guy's neck and, like, hurt myself, like, to where I would hurt myself so I could get off of the road for a while. And, like, have time. Like, I was to the point where I would rather be injured like a dumbass, you know what I mean, than have to go back out there again and, like, deal with all, like, the politics. I was never good at the politics and, like, all that kind of stuff that went along with it. But I had a ton of people, like, trying to help me. A ton of people did, man. Like, and I wasn't ready to hear it. I was a kid. I didn't have a problem. I didn't have nothing. Like, I was fine. You know what I mean? It's your guys' problem, not mine. That kind of thing.
So you literally injured yourself on purpose with someone you knew had a reputation for that. You tried to.
Yeah, tried to. I was just too damn good, man. Too safe. I just couldn't do it.
You and Bret Hart. Man.
And I knew it. I knew, like, I was like, oh, crap, man. Like, okay. I need to, like, take a step back and start slowing stuff down. And there, like I said, there was numerous people that tried to help me out and try to get me going right. Like, still to this day, like, when I see Ricky Steamboat, he really, really tried to help me, you know. Like, Edge and Christian, they really tried to help me, you know. A lot of guys did, but I wasn't ready to hear it, man. I was just a dumb kid, you know.
Old age slows you down, that's for sure.
So right. So you didn't wrestle for 2 years, and then what ended up getting you back into wrestling?
My one of my best friends in the whole world, like Luke Gallows, and he calls me, hey, I got this dark match at TNA. He's like, I can't make it. I told him you'd go. And I was like, dude, I've wrestled one match in like 2 years. You know, like, I can't go in front of like a real crowd and do something. And he's like, well, I already told him you'd do it, man. And he's like, don't you want to like try to get there and like be a team, like be a tag team and all that shit? Like, because we always talked about that. And I was like, well, yeah, man. But I was like, I'm in no shape to do this. And he's like, all right, man, I'll just tell him, man, like, whatever. Like, I was like, all right, you shithead. Like, so I went and did a dark match at TNA. And after the one match in Guyana, and I did a dark match against D-Von and one against Kaz. And after 2 years of not working more than one time, I got hired with TNA.
Hey, so, Mike, when you were in TNA, your name was Nux. Who came up with that genius name?
Hated it. Oh my God, hated it.
That's just stupid. Like, that's because I'm as hell, right?
Like, yeah, because they're like, oh, well, I was a biker, and I was like, just put Noxy on there, man. That's what everybody calls me, anyways. Like, just put it on there. You know what I mean? So, like, at first, if you remember, when I first went out there, they called me Mike Nox because I didn't have a name like pretty much the whole time until I got demasked. So, I get demasked like a year after I had the mask on. And they called me Mike Nox the first couple nights. And then they're like, hey, man, is that, like, your name or whatever? I was like, well, that's the only one I've ever, like, used. You know what I mean? I used it in WWE, but they've never said nothing about, like, you know, how they own it or nothing like that. But they got scared anyways. And they didn't even tell me that that was my name until they brought the patch and it said Nux. I was like, guys, this is rotten. I was like, please, just let me pick a completely different, weird, random name, like, anything. Like, just a regular John Smith, anything. this is such a dumb knockoff name in like the Aces and Age, which was like the knockoff. It was like a fourth degree knockoff, like from the what the heck was that show?
Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, Sons of Anarchy. They're like, hey, watch all of Sons of Anarchy. You're gonna be a biker now. I was like, oh shit, okay. I told everybody that.
And your name was Nux.
Yeah. Yeah. Striking fear into the hearts of women and children everywhere.
So, what is Mike Nox up to these, or Nux, I don't know which one you prefer, but let's call you Mike Nox. What are you up to these days, man?
You know what? I'm still kicking around a little bit. Like, I do a few shows here and there. I've really, really started slowing it down. Like I was saying, you know, the older you get, like, you know, your knees start hurting a little bit more on your back, and, you know, you start worrying about your head a little bit and wondering if all that damage you did, like, if it's going to come and catch up to you. And, you know, like I was saying, you can't do it forever. So I was trying to get back into the regular world, and I worked a couple of jobs, and it was kind of like, oh, shit, man, this is, like, what people have to do? Like, I ain't gonna be able to do this anymore, bro. I'm just about live out in the desert, hang out with Indians again. And, you know, so I do a couple little matches here and there, and I actually, I went and, I got my dang real estate license. So,
nice, man.
Real estate, I'm my own boss. I'm, getting her going, man, kicking a little bit of butt here. I think it'll be hilarious if I make more money at that than I ever did at wrestling.
So, if someone wants to get a hold of Mike, if you want to buy your house from Mike Nox, or if you want to get a hold of you for an appearance or maybe even a match, how can people get a hold of Mike Nox?
I'll tell you what, man, I keep it pretty simple. If you want to get a hold of me for any kind of booking or anything, like I said, I don't take as many as I used to. It's pretty simple. Book Mike Nox at hotmail.com, man. Shoot me something and I'll get back to you. And if you're in the Tampa area and you're looking to buy a home or sell a house, or you just need a little advice when it comes to real estate, you can get a hold of me at m.hettinga@kw.com. Keller Williams, yo. Can you believe it? That's how adult I am.
Mike Nox has gone legit, Robbie.
Look at me. God.
I just want to see him in a suit.
Oh, come on, bro.
Well, Mike, you've said it all, we've heard it all, and you've been an awesome guest, man. Thank you so much for joining us today, man.
You guys are so full of shit.
Hey, do you have that, Mike? Do you have Twitter or Instagram or anything that you want to promote?
Oh, dude, you just continuously. Why are you treating me this way, bro? Why would you do this to me? I do have that shit, but I'll be honest, I haven't been on it in like 3 years. I have no idea how to use it. But, you know.
Do you have like a home address or a phone number you want to leave? Or
I'm a wandering man, bro. I'm a gypsy by nature.
You can reach Mike at the world's last Hotmail account, Hook Mike Knox.
Yeah, the world's last Hotmail account delivered to the oldest computer in the world.
Yeah, wait. What's your AOL screen name?
Yeah. I still got that dial up. Hold on, take a second.
Hey, Mike, thanks a lot for joining us, man. It's been a good time.
Hey, bro, we appreciate it.
They will give anybody a motherfucking podcast now, won't they, bro? just let you run with it, don't they?
Evidently. You got it in.
Hey, I got to throw one other thing out there, man. I missed my boy's birthday party tonight to do this incredible show, so I'm going to give a shout-out to Ryan Lancaster. Don't be mad, Daddy. I'll get you a present or something late. Maybe an 8x10.
Well, I'll tell you, Robbie, Mike had a lot to say. What did you think about all the crazy stories we heard from Mike Knox?
You know, for a guy that says back in the day he was super shy, and, you know, he was a big guy that didn't talk a lot. I mean, he didn't stop talking. I feel like he could be a comedian, he's a funny dude.
And all you guys who want wrestling insider knowledge, if you ever wanted to figure out a way how to connect Mike Knox and Kenny Omega, all you got to do is listen to Why It Ended. I didn't even expect that name to come up.
Yeah, well, I mean, when he did, I did know he was in Deep South, Kenny Omega, but I guess I forgot about it. But that's what's cool. I love just talking to guys and remembering all this stuff because, you know, you read about it years ago or you hear it through the grapevine, but hearing it right from someone who experienced it all, it's just kind of like, wow.
And it goes to show, guys, I know when I look at interviews for wrestlers, sometimes I'll skip over someone I might not be interested in, but you never know how great these stories will be. I mean, if you don't like Buff Bagwell and you miss the Buff Bagwell show, you missed a hell of a show. And if you missed the Mike Knox show, he might not be someone that a lot of people might raise their eyebrows at. But I think it was a really funny, entertaining interview, Robbie.
Yeah, well, that's what, and you know, a lot of people said the same thing about Chris Harris. They didn't really know who he was if they were a WWE fan. He was big in TNA. They didn't really know who he was, but they said that they loved his story and they loved listening. And that's the great thing. Any, you know, our show is based on guys who had TV runs and we want to know why their TV run ended. And anyone who had TV experience wrestling, they're going to have some entertaining stuff in their story. Like they're going to have some kind of wild ride to get where they got and to end up where they are now. So it doesn't really matter who we have on. I actually think a lot of the black sheep, the ones we're not expecting, are going to be the greatest episodes we have.
Well, speaking of black sheep, you know, I've been joking a little bit about this and trying to take credit for it, but we're going to find out what he has to say, because one of the black sheep in the history of professional wrestling, Muhammad Hassan, made his return, and we have the exclusive interview with him on his comeback. Robbie, what do you want to hear from our good friend Mark Penn?
Now, I want to know how it was. I mean, you got to think, 13 years, not 13 weeks, not 13 months, 13 years not stepping foot into a wrestling ring. I just want to know the nerves before he went out, how the crowd reacted to him, how it felt hitting the ropes and the mat for the first time. I mean, he was a kid almost then, and now he's a grown man, a principal. It's just two different people that are stepping into this ring. I just can't wait to hear what the experience was like.
I'm thrilled for him, and I want to find out the story and want to know how he feels about it, what the future holds. And we're going to find out, because coming up right now, Muhammad Hassan comes back to Why It Ended. All right, Robbie, look who we're joined with now. We are joined by Mark Capani, Mr. Muhammad Hassan himself. How you doing today, Mark?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're doing pretty good. And I got to say, when I saw that you returned for your match, I was shocked, because I feel like after we talked a few weeks ago, you kind of made it clear that you probably never were going to wrestle again, and you were okay with that. So how did it turn into you wrestling a match?
You know what? When I agreed to do the appearance, I had planned on doing an autograph signing and then an appearance at the show, like a meet and greet before the show. It turned into maybe a run-in and then maybe a little something with Ben Hameen. And when I got there, I still wasn't going to wrestle a match. When I got there, I brought my shit, and it was the first time I had ever even took my gear out in like 13 years. And I still wasn't going to wrestle until probably about 6 o'clock, like 45 minutes before the show started, when I started talking to Ben and Jimmy Papadon. And I felt comfortable with Papadon in there. So I was like, you know what? Let's just do a match. Fuck it. I mean, I know it's been 13 years. I can't do much, but let's go out and have some fun. And so that's what it was. It was just, it was a lot of fun to get back in there in front of a crowd and just to wrestle again. I mean, it was awesome.
Now, I got to say, we've been taking a lot of credit for you coming back, and I think
and we're trying to.
But I definitely, it was interesting because I listened back to it today. You know, you said when you were done with wrestling, you were done with wrestling. But I remember asking you the question if it was like a, you know, like an old girlfriend that betrayed you and you felt kind of, you know, brokenhearted about it. And you said yes. So I think we could hear it in your voice that maybe you would come back, but I even think during our interview, it wouldn't even be a possibility if someone asked you that day.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think, I think you were a lot more spot on than I had thought when you talked about being heartbroken. It took me a little reflection to figure out that, you know what, that was probably it. but yeah, I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that I did not plan on wrestling again. I mean, like I had told you guys on the show, I was taking bookings. I'll do appearances. I'll do autograph signings. I didn't mind doing those. But I think talking to you guys and we were joking around about it, Matt, but it is kind of true that just reminiscing and talking about wrestling again did kind of jumpstart the bug. And I did. You know, and then being around in a promotion and being at the show and being around a bunch of wrestlers, and I got in the ring and worked with a couple of them a little bit before the show. I did. I was like, you know what? I want to wrestle. I want to go out there and see if I can still do it. I don't know how often I'm going to do it after this, but I'm definitely happy that I did. I had so much fun, and they're just a great group of guys, and I had a great time just being out in front of that crowd and doing it. But you're right. I mean, I didn't plan on it back then. I'm not kidding when I say that I went there last week without the intention of wrestling. That is the case. I really didn't plan on doing a full match.
I think it's crazy that you just you still are in the wrestler mentality to just bring your gear in your trunk just in case, like you had it on you, you know?
Yeah, no, I did. I mean, because I thought maybe, you know, and I swear to God, it's the weirdest thing. For the last 10 years, I have had dream after dream after dream that I am in some place about to wrestle, but I don't have my gear. I swear to God. And so before I left the house, I went through the checklist and I'm like, man, I am forgetting something, because there's no way that I was just having this dream for no reason. And so I was very careful to make sure I brought everything that I needed, my ankle braces, my boots. The first time I put my boots on, that was the first time in 13 years. I put the ankle braces on. Put the boots on, and I started taking steps. I'm like, man, this doesn't feel right. I think I messed this up. I was like, I don't think I put them on right.
The gear's 13 years old?
Oh, yeah, yeah, but I only wore those trunks a couple times. Those are some of my newer-looking trunks. Yeah, no, the gear's been in a sealed Ziploc bag and a little, you know, little tubby thing that I got that I keep all my stuff in. But, no, that was the first time in 13 years that I put anything on, knee pads, you know, wrestling boots, trunks, anything. I'm happy they still fit.
Were you surprised that there was so much interest, whether in our interview or when you appeared? Are you still kind of surprised that people want to see you now?
Yeah, I really am. I mean, my inbox is full. I've gotten more offers in 2 days. I mean, if I wanted to, I could probably book the entire summer. And it's probably not the best way to book shows, but I'm kind of booking them just on accessibility, how easy it is for me to get there, because, you know, I mean, I work 50, 60 hours a week, so it's got to be easy for me to get there, wrestle, and get home that night. But yeah, I was very surprised at the interest. I mean, and you know, I kept joking today, like, everybody's going to forget about it next week. Don't worry. But yeah, I have gotten offers to be in just in the last couple of days, England, Singapore, and all over the country. So, I mean, I'm trying to answer them back as quick as I can, and I'll take a few more bookings and I might do a few more matches. But it's still going to be rare to see me on a card.
And how crazy is it that this week, the same week that you made your return, Daivari made his return to WWE. Did you hear that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I talked to him that night. I completely coincidental. Like, I've had this show booked for weeks. I was so happy to see it. I texted it right after that, and we were talking about this show and talking about, you know, his appearance. And him and the area did a great job. I mean, they are so over his heels. You know, I really hope the WWE does the right thing and picks him up. But, yeah, no, it was complete coincidence, but I was so happy to see that.
So looking back on, you know, this crazy month, you know, for you, you know, we did the interview. And now a month later, it's not why it ended. It's why it ended. Where are they now? It's kind of weird. But
How did it restart?
But, I'm sorry if I killed the show's theme, man. That wasn't my intention.
Not at all. We're just going to keep trying to put ourselves over, if that's okay. But let me ask you this. If we didn't do that interview with you a month ago, if you hadn't been kind of reflecting and thinking about it, you can answer truthfully. You don't have to say it to make us happy. Do you think you would have brought your gear that night? Do you think you would be wrestling right now?
I don't think so, man. I'm telling you, like, a big part of it was, you know, being 38. I just turned 38 like 2 weeks before that. And seeing if I could still do it and talking to you guys was definitely a catalyst. It was, you know, bring back a lot of memories. And, you know, it, like I said, just talking about wrestling again felt good. And it was good to go to a show, a small show, and just talk wrestling and get in the ring and you know, work with some guys on even simple things like hitting the ropes and, you know, and vicious heat and selling. And you know, not that I know much about selling because I never was much of a babyface, but... Right. You know, no, I mean, I'm not even blowing smoke. It did jumpstart it. You know, that interview definitely jumpstarted and piqued my interest again and made me feel like, you know what, maybe I can do this again. And I'm not looking to do it full time by any means, like I said, but it felt good to get in there and to do it again. And not that it was one of my best matches, you know, like I said, I hadn't done shit in 13 years. Yeah, and that was funny because I remember Papanon's like, hey, are there any moves you want to get in? I'm like, nope. I can't think of any that I can do, man. Like, honestly, you never want to be unsafe. You don't want to be unsafe and hurt the other guy. You don't want to hurt yourself. So, you know, we kept it pretty simple. But, no, man, it felt good to talk wrestling, and it felt good to actually be wrestling again.
You know, how did the fans react when you came through the curtain?
He was a face.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
They popped, man. But, you know, it's a 300-400 people, which they popped. I mean, it was a good crowd. And I did the meet and greet before the show, and I was just very happy to, you know, it was cool. I did it with Sandman, and it was cool to see that a lot of people still remembered me and still remembered my matches and still remembered. And, you know, you always hear the same shit over and over again. Oh, you got so screwed. You got so screwed. But it was good that people still, it was a smart audience. They, you know, it was a good crowd. And that was one of the reasons why I did the show, because that was what I was told. And, you know, it was cool to be again in front of a crowd and have them appreciate me being there.
I think Robbie was curious about some things about being in the ring the first time, right, Robbie? Like, what was it like to take his first bump in a while and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, just hitting the ropes, you know, hitting the mat. I mean, you know how it is. Was it Dude. Weird? Is your body sore?
Yes. No, man. It was, you know, here's the weird thing is I got there early. Like, I got there at 3:30. The show didn't start at 6:45. I want to get in the ring. I got there when they're still setting it up. So, getting in the ring and running the ropes, it felt like the first time. And I can still remember the first time in OVW with Nick Dinsmore running the ropes and taking bumps. And that's how it felt. Like, you hit the ropes and you're like, oh shit, this hurts a little bit. You know, I mean, obviously I'm not going to sell it, but in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, this shit hurts. Maybe the ropes are too tight. Maybe that's what it is. And then I took a standing bump, and it felt like the first bump I ever took. I mean, my whole body jarred. And it's just like, all right. You know, you forget because, you know, I was a heel. So I bump and fed, bump and feed, bump and feed. And I did that, you know, 80 times a night. But you forget how jarring it is to take a bump, especially in a smaller ring. The funny thing is that when the match started, during the match, you don't feel anything. Like, it's just the difference between practicing and a match where, you know, you're hitting the ropes, you're taking bumps, and it's completely different. But, oh, my God, like, hey, yeah, hitting the ropes and taking a bump for the first time in 13 years, I thought I was going to be very sore the next day. But surprisingly, I was fine. I mean, I wasn't sore at all.
Were you blown up during the match? Like, were you tired out?
No, you know what? I really, I mean, we work slow. I mean, if you watch, we work slow. We didn't do anything too crazy. You know, like I said, I'm really happy that Papa Don respected the fact that I hadn't wrestled in 13 years. And I was a little unsure of myself. I mean, understandably, because 13 years is a long time. But, you know, I run. I run 5 days a week. I run a mile and a half, 2 miles a day, and I can do an 8-minute mile. And I had never did that when I was wrestling. I never did cardio like that. So, you know, I think that helped a lot because I got in there and I wasn't blown up at all. I probably should have went a little bit harder just to get the workout in.
Were you nervous before you went out?
I was nervous before. And I remember joking with Ben and with Jimmy, with Ben Hameen and Papa Don. Like, I know I sound like a rookie right now. And I know I kind of am, because 13 years is a long time. But the second I went out there, there were no nerves. It was just fun. Like, that's the only way I could describe it. It was just fun to be out there. No nerves whatsoever. I completely was comfortable in the ring. You know, I obviously can't do the things that I used to be able to do. At least I didn't try them, but very comfortable once the match started. It was like, I keep saying it, but it was just a lot of fun to do it.
Well, I mean, it's almost like everything kind of turned out for the best, because now you don't have a lot of stuff on your bump card. Not that you want to come back and wrestle a lot, but I was talking to a kind of a wrestling insider today, and he said Hassan could wrestle an Impact this weekend if he wanted to, you know. And he said summer's coming up. He's a high school principal. He's going to work a lot of dates this summer. So we're going to see what kind of schedule do you see you having this summer and coming up? How many matches do you think you're going to do?
Well, I mean, I still work during the summer, but I do take vacation. And, you know, I have my 4-year-old son, Sam. And, you know, I didn't mention that my girlfriend of the last couple of years, Jamie, has 3 girls, 2 5-year-old twins, Mila and Lana, and then a 9-year-old, Lily. So I am busy. But I could definitely book the entire summer if I wanted to, just based on the last couple of days. But you'll definitely see me doing some more appearances. You'll see me in some more shows. And again, you know, if it's something that's accessible that I can get to, then I'd love to wrestle again. It's going to still be rare. I don't know if that makes it more valuable or not, but Muhammad Hassan matches are definitely going to be rare. But, you know, it was nice to hear people say that, you know, man, you look like you haven't missed a beat, you know, even though I felt like I did. And I'm sure they're just being nice, but you know, it definitely, once you get in there and you get going, a lot of instinct comes back and you don't feel as rusty as you felt when you first, you know, when you first.
It sounds to me like, you know, you've woken up a side of yourself that you don't know how big a part of your life it's going to get, that's been gone a long time. And it sounds like you've got the bug again a little bit. Would that be accurate to say?
You know what? It's funny you say that. Maybe a little bit. And again, I am by no means leaving my career. You know, the kids all found out today, so I had to field questions from teachers and kids.
Oh, shit.
And, you know, the way I explained it is, look, I spent 8 years in school. I worked very hard to get to where I am to make money with my mind. I'm not going to go back to making money by breaking my body. But Shad Gaspar texted me the other night from Crime Time. And he said, and Shad's always very insightful and very deep, so you can always count on him for that. But he said, we are who we are. It doesn't define us, but we should not deny it. And I said, you know what, man, you're right. Because it definitely felt good to be out there. And it definitely felt good to go back to something that I love to do. And again, I liked doing a smaller show. It felt more like an OVW show than a WWE show. And I think that that's what I really enjoyed, is that there wasn't that pressure. There wasn't a ref in my face saying, you got, go home, or you got 2 minutes, or you got 7 minutes now instead of 3. And it's like, well, what the fuck am I going to do now? You know, it felt really good to be able to go out there and just kind of freestyle. I mean, we didn't even plan promos. We just went out there and started talking. And, you know, I mean, I wasn't too thrilled with my mic skills, but I guess after 13 years, what can you expect? But
you probably sounded like a high school principal just lecturing people.
Yeah, right. Just tell him he's got detention next week and he's better than this. But it definitely felt good to get back in there. And I did get bit by the bug a little bit. But I'm being realistic, man. I'm not in the position to take, you know, to be a weekend warrior again. And that's not something I want to do. But I loved it. I had so much fun that I definitely want to do it again.
Well, I got to be honest, I'm thrilled for you, and I got chills because I just think it's so great that one of the great injustices a lot of people believe in wrestling history is righted, and you've come full circle. Robbie, what do you have to say to our friend Mark here about what's gone on for him.
No, no, I'm just glad that it was a good experience making your return to the ring. And before we let you go, definitely. I mean, now's, you know, it's more important now than the last time you were on to definitely give your email, your Twitter, your Instagram, all that stuff, so people can reach out to you if they want shows, signings, seminars.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll take more. Like I said, I'll do what I can. Twitter handle is mcapani1. My Facebook is, it's still Mark Capani. You can message me on there. I got 1,000 messages. I'm going through them. I got 1,000 friend requests. Apparently, I'm a very popular guy in the last couple of days. and my email, which is a better way to reach me, is mcapani, C-O-P-A-N-I, at Oswego, O-S-W-E-G-O.edu.
Well, thank you for joining us, Mark. Thank you for your time. I know we planned this last minute, but we were so happy for you. And Robbie, how great is it to have Mark on the show today?
Yeah, I think we should. We'll check in with you again probably in a few weeks, because this seems like it's going to be a regular thing.
You know what, man? If you guys need me, I'm here. I love doing the show for you guys, and I've been listening to the show, and you guys are doing a great job. I think it's an awesome concept, and you guys are just awesome to talk to. So whenever you need me, man, give me a text, give me a call, and I'll be on.
Thanks.
Awesome,
lot,
dude. Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Wow. Holy crap, Robbie. Dude, Muhammad Hassan is back.
You know, as much as I believe that, I know me and you had talked that we really do think it was our podcast that got set into his mind and his heart as to what led him to have his wrestling match again. Actually hearing him say it was a wow. You know what I mean? Like, we made a guy that hasn't stepped in a ring for 13 years. We gave him a boost to step back in the ring because of the interview we did with him. Think about that, Matt. Think about the life that you changed, Matt Coon.
It's amazing. And there's not one person you run into that thinks that he wasn't good or he deserved what he got. And for me, this is one of the greatest injustices in wrestling history, and it's been righted, and we kind of had a hand in that. So I think we can pat ourselves a little bit on the back. But wow, why it ended is, what'd you say, Robbie? Changing lives.
It's changing lives, and I'm happy for him. He is, he deserves it. And if you notice, in his first interview, as much as he was still a great talker and everything, there was a little more pep in his step in this interview. He sounded a little more positive and smiley. You could just tell he was just happier today.
He seemed to be happy. And you know, I'd be happy if we could get 500 YouTube subscribers and we could give you a bonus show. So we're about at 400 some odd right now. All we need are 100 more subscribers and you get a bonus show of why it ended. Robbie, what else do people need to know about where to reach us and how to get a hold of us?
Twitter at why it ended, Instagram at why it ended. Like Matt just said, our YouTube is at why it ended with Robbie E. And remember, whether you're listening to us on iTunes or whyitended.com or wherever, make sure you're subscribing, make sure you're leaving a rating and a review, and just tell your friends, take people's phones. I told you already, just get people to subscribe.
And make sure to follow us, of course, at Why It Ended on Twitter. Robbie, is it Robbie E Impact? Is that right?
That's my Twitter, and my Instagram is Real Robbie E.
And I'm at Matt Coon Music. And make sure to tune in next week on Why It Ended, because we are changing lives.
Stops.